Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. It is September 27th, 2017. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here. You guys probably already know that because you're listening, and I really appreciate that. Thank you for joining us. I say the time and the date for the listeners on our podcast so that they can listen anytime and kind of get a historical context about the things we discuss because we're pretty topical. This is a radio show where I interview activists, but as everyone who listens regularly knows, it's kind of an opinion show because I give my opinion a lot. So anyways, thank you for joining us. And I want to give a shout out to KEPW.org, our affiliate who is airing our show. I spoke with the producer this last weekend, and she's going to be working on putting an RSS feed from our shows directly onto their site, and they're going to be getting a cuss button. So she said, I don't have to strain too badly about it in the future. I'm not the worst cusser on the air, except when I start talking about nuclear, you know, what these nuclear liars are doing. But I have discovered it's just as easy to exchange other words, which I'm really committed to doing. Thanks for joining us. Today we have with us a guy I met through YouTube again, like I did Kevin Blanche, but this man's name is Jerome Hebert. He's the sane environmentalist. He's on YouTube. I like him because he is sensible. He was kind of new to Fukushima and very spontaneous, doing a lot of his own research, and has made a commitment that he is changing his life, and he's going to make a journey up and down the coast and around the country doing tests and making things. It's a long-term commitment, so it's a little bit of planning. But I have him on here. And on his YouTube channel, he also throws the I Ching, which many of you may not be aware of. But and he and I actually use the same text, which is really the primary text of in English that we all use. And he does a reading every day on the I Ching, and it's kind of a guidance. It's not a religion. It's more like philosophy. So with all that being said, thanks, Jerome, for joining us today.
I can't tell you how happy I am to be here with you today. Thank you.
Well, good. And we're happy to have you. I always like to have these interviews sort of be the interview that the person who's on my show wants to discuss. So, and I asked you, what did you want to bring up? You had an interesting comment. You wanted to talk about how green, these quote, green alternatives are not so green, right?
Yes.
So what was your point?
Well, I think the point I'm making is that there is really no such thing as green energy. believe it or not, with the exception of or anything that puts out carbon dioxide, because carbon dioxide is a direct substance that creates green. I mean, that's, plants absorb carbon dioxide through chlorophyll synthesis and produce greenness, leaves, you know. So even though there is a lot of particulate and other types of pollution with oil and gas and coal or what do they call them, fossil fuels, they are closer to actually doing something to renew the environment versus just destroy it, you know, the way that nuclear does. You know, we know about the mining that has to go into making solar panels, wind turbines. I was just watching an InfoWars thing this morning about wind turbines, and these big giant wind turbines produce what they call infrasound, which is super low frequency, very loud sound that we can't hear. It's too low to hear, but it produces other effects in animals and humans and living organisms. That super low frequency sound from those football field length fan blades spinning around.
Yeah, but how close do you have to be? How close are you? Most wind turbines are far away from people. So that's my question about, to me, wind and hydro make the most, I mean, hydro makes the most sense to me because our planet is mostly water. So there's ways to do that. But there's also electromagnetic and there's also sound energy. I've had Shaziz and Larry Woods on this show, and we've discussed, like, Larry Woods has this invention where you can get this machine and plug it in and it's renewable. It's just like you never have to do it again. Boom, here it is. And we don't have to change the electrical grid. It works perfectly with what we got already set up so that we could transition into other things. There's actually things where you can just like never use the grid again. I mean, it's amazing, but it's being suppressed.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Just like the medical industry, you know, a lot of our medical illnesses are so-called illnesses. Oh, that's life. No, it's not life. This was not life before the AMA and before Big Pharma decided we were assets on their balance sheets.
Exactly.
So the energy, let's talk about this, because this idea that it is not green, there's a lot of not green, so-called green alternatives, like 350.org is actually pushing keeping nuclear power plants open so that they can shut down coal plants.
Which is just, in my opinion, ridiculous thinking.
Well, what's really, really ironic about it is it's not just the coal waste, but the coal pits. What they do is they open up all these uranium. All the uranium gets exposed. The uranium tailings is horrendous for the miners. And that's a big expense, or it ought to be a big expense for the owners. But they've never been able to push through those safety standards because it's nuclear. Nuclear has its own, anything related to nuclear has its own little bubble, man.
Yeah. And it's apparently untouchable. But that, you know, that's why I'm doing my journey, is because it's a journey of education and discovery. You know, I would hope that when I get to the coast and I start heading down the coast and start testing the air and the water and looking under the water and looking at the tide pools, I pray to God that everything is okay.
You know, so, Jerome, why don't you tell our listeners where you're going to go? And then I have a question about that, your study, how you're going to conduct it, or maybe just a suggestion. So why don't you tell them where you're going to go?
Well, I'm going to start in Point Flattery, Washington, on the coast. And I'm going to ride my bike all the way down to San Diego, testing every 10 miles all the way down. And then I'm going to jump across to Brownsville, Texas, and I'm going to do the Gulf Coast all the way around Florida and then back up the East Coast. And I should end up in northern Maine I'm not sure where, but as far north as I can get and snow and not be in Canada.
Wow. Basically. How long do you think it'll take you? 2 years?
At least that. Probably a year and a half, 2 years. I plan to start in May of this year or next year coming on. And I figure I should probably by the beginning of winter be in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably by spring, I'll be like around north or South Carolina. And so about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. I'm not going to rush it. I'm going to be as thorough as I can.
Well, that's good because that was my suggestion, that when you go down the road, like, and pick an area, a location, like, let's say you decide you're going to look at a 50, like, you get your circle going, you know, you get your 50 square feet diameter you're going to test in, right? Take a couple samples from there. But if you, or the 10, the 50 and the 10, I think 50, 10, and 1 is like, isn't that like, believe, that's what I was told, a standard scientific procedure. You get three zones and you go back there. Like, if you could go back there to the same site two or three days in a row, especially with the nuclear, it'd be interesting to see, you know, within that little 50 zone, if you went there like 3 days in a week period, for example, and tested the samples and then shipped them off to Mark all in one. Because Mark Casebeer from who works with Mimi Gurman at Radcast, and No Nukes Northwest, I know, is getting this together so that they can create a venue where people can test their own dirt, send it into No Nukes Northwest, get your own dirt. They need 3 cups of dirt. Mail it into No Nukes Northwest with $50 for the testing fees. And Mark Casebeer will test it. And if it tests positive, there's a lab that will confirm it.
Ooh, I like that idea.
Yeah, so that's, I hadn't, you know what, I know that your journey's on the long way. We talked about this recently, but that's, I mean, I hope that you and I can coordinate on this and make that really happen. So you're not, you can get dirt tested and we can get it shipped to Mark and have it done on or all throughout the whole thing. And he can track it and log it and be testing it while you're traveling.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
I love that idea, actually.
One of my only concerns is that as a citizen scientist, I'm not peer-reviewed or researched or any of that. So, you know, I believe that my listeners will see the work I'm doing and say, okay, this is real science. But I would love for the scientific community to as well acknowledge.
Well, then that just means you need to partner up with somebody at the university between now and then and say, hey, how do we make my journey become a scientific journal? Like, how do we give you the information? Because we're going to have it lab tested. We will have it tested. And one of the goals of No Nukes Northwest is to buy a real scientific, like a whole $6,000 machine. It's like an expensive thing. But part of the reason Heidi told me that last year or the year before, I think they tried to get one. The reason they couldn't get a grant to buy it, because they had put in a grant to buy it, was that they needed somebody who knew how to run it. They weren't going to just let them buy a $6,000 piece. So I guess this is a shout out in this interview, isn't it, here? If anybody, you can connect with Jerome through YouTube, the Sane Environmentalist. If there's any like scientific types who can help him make that a reality, we are planning. You are planning right now.
Absolutely. You know, and what I'm thinking the regime logically would be get myself some sort of a little dinghy type thing where I can go out 10 feet deep in the water and get a GoPro, stick it under the water on a stick, look around, see what we have for life forms under there.
Kind of like what Dana Durnford is doing in Canada. He's doing that in Canada.
Yeah, and then test the water for phosphates, nitrates, nuclides, and test the air with a Geiger counter, you know. And of course, if there's questionable soil, you know, let's say if I get there and there's almost no life in the tide pools and 0.4 microsieverts or 0.5 microsieverts per hour radiation in the air, then I'm going to say, okay, this is a good place to test the soil. You know, or if there's a bunch of dead plants around, you know, test the soil, find out what killed them. What's, you know, I think that we'll probably find a lot more nitrate phosphate contamination.
For sure.
Than we do radionuclide contamination. But the thing about radionuclides, it takes very little and they don't ever, ever go away. Nitrates and phosphates will eventually absorb and go away, you know, and the soil will rebuild itself. But, you know, radionuclides will create a situation where the soil, the life forms within the soil can't do their job, you know.
Jerome, do you have a Patreon page or a GoFundMe page?
I do. I'm the same environmentalist at Patreon.
Okay, because this is what I was thinking, like, for the journey, you probably for sure need a really, like, it would be nice to have a good, like, maybe even two good Geiger counters, like, you know, have two, like that. There's a person in Japan that I follow on YouTube. He, you know, it's illegal to talk about anything in Japan about radioactivity. You can't say anything. It's illegal. So he puts out these videos, and he drives around the country, and he takes pictures of the environment, and then somewhere in there, he'll put some Geiger counter readings. He has like a stand that holds two Geiger counters. It's specifically made to hold the Geiger counters up. So he puts them both, and you can see the readings, and it is shocking what people are living in near Fukushima. It's right outside of the Fukushima prefecture, like where you're allowed to live. And in the Fukushima prefecture where you're allowed to live, and the radioactive levels is super hot, what we would consider to be really high, like 3.4, 2 point. It doesn't go beeping until it's over 100. They changed the rules, remember. So now it can go very high. So it's Kiori, K-E-O-I-R-I. That's his name, I believe, on YouTube. You can look on my playlist if you're interested. If you just go to my playlist on my YouTube channel, Nuts for Art, NutzForArt. It's open and you can look at my playlist, which is right interesting. There's a lot of people
in
on
Arizona,
there.
Arizona, we're looking at 0.1, according to this Radix Geiger counter, we're looking at 0.14 microsieverts per hour background.
Which and that's what terrible. That, yeah, but that's probably, it's probably higher than that. If you were to get a really good, you don't have like a $600 or $700 Geiger counter.
No.
You know,
no,
like I those, it's.
A good friend of mine actually sent this to me for free. Love her to death.
Yeah, well, and, it's pretty inexpensive. It's a pretty inexpensive little thing. I've seen you use it. So it can't be that strong. But you know what? It gives you a good sense. If you're getting 0.14, even 0.28 is considered normal. You know, they consider that normal. They raise the radioactive rates to 1.0 before they, you know, tell us anything here. I mean, it's pretty high. That's the other thing. Can you explain, Jerome, how people, the average listener who doesn't understand how these Geiger counters work, what that means when you're looking at the Geiger counter, because you took the time to really, that's the thing that impressed me. You took the time to really understand how this works. So can you explain how these Geiger counters work and like what that means?
Well, there's actually a couple different types of radio nuclide detectors. There's a gamma ray detector, which is what this is, what I have. This little Radix basically is just looking at gamma radiation, okay, and in microsieverts per hour. But they also have ones that pick up the alpha and beta particles as well. Those are the $600-$700 ones with the wand, you know. And but at point, anything below 0.2, I think is you're going to get at least that much from minerals and the rocks around you and stuff like that. But then again, and I recently went from Fort Collins, Colorado, where we were looking at 0.4 to 3 to 0.4, I went down to Denver, and I got readings as high as 0.6 in Denver, which is super high. I think.
Well, also in Denver, there's a lot of it's a highly developed city. There's a lot of, you know, electricity. There's a lot of microwaves. I mean, it's all radiation, right? So it's all, that's probably why it's much higher, too. As well as being in the direct line of fire of Rocky Flats.
It's gamma radiation, though. They're gamma radiation is specific to splitting atoms. Okay? Split atoms produce gamma radiation. Microwaves don't. They produce electromagnetic in a much lower frequency level than gamma. You know, one of the dangerous things about gamma radiation is it goes through everything except for lead, pretty much, and concrete, you know. But yeah, gamma radiation is a whole
listen to what Dr. John Goffman says in Poison Power. This is what he says. If the same radionuclide were ingested with radioactivity contaminated food or water and distributed uniformly throughout the body tissues, all body organs can be irradiated by it. Whereas the internal organs are safe when such a nuclide is placed outside the body. However, a skin damage can be severe. And then it says the same is true for X-rays or gamma rays. Low energy X-rays or gamma rays from outside the body may not affect a deeply situated organ. On the other hand, if the radionuclide emitting those same X-rays or gamma rays were taken into the body, it can affect any organ it X-rays or gamma rays reach. So there's a difference. I mean, these things are not anything that we ought to be playing around with or even using under any circumstances, I believe.
Well, you know, I had an interesting discussion with my brother, who has also researched, ironically enough, was very interested in the whole Fukushima and radiation thing. And, you know, I'm like, we need to. He said, well, what about the pinnacle? What about smoke detectors? Should we not build any more smoke detectors?
Yeah, but that's such a small
things that we use. That...
Yeah. Well, so are stop signs. Stop signs have tritium on them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what makes them reflective, you know? So I had to admit that there is a place for nuclear. And the only place for nuclear I could think of you know, and I haven't even actually. I'm going to hold this Geiger counter up next to a smoke detector right now and see what it does.
Well, I think you're getting a little fuzzy there. You're going to hold the Geiger counter to the smoke detector to see if it'll pick it up right now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what it does. My guess would be there's probably not enough to set it off. I mean,
no.
No.
No, actually, the level.
And that's what they count on. What?
The level actually went down a little close to the
ceiling.
Right,
because they have sealants and things on it to protect it and all that junk. I mean, the issue is, I disagree. I think the conversation needs to go about like what Donna Gilmore realized when she started researching San Onofre. We don't need to have electricity. We don't need this. In some places, we have an abundance of electricity. Now, whether we need more in California to shut down San Onofre, the proponents of San Onofre were saying, yeah, but if you do, we're going to have rolling blackouts. We need to have it. It's 10% of our energy or 4% of our energy grid. When Donna Gilmore researched, it turns out they had an excess of energy already. They didn't need it at all.
Yeah. You know who needs it? Big Brother needs it.
Right. They want our money. I mean, it's really about our
money.
Well,
one thing they're doing is they're continuing to make fuel in nuclear power plants. Okay? They're making plutonium. You know, don't fool yourself into thinking that it's all about electricity. It isn't. Electricity is a side effect that they can profit from. Okay, but the purpose of a nuclear power plant is to breed plutonium. And that's why they're still doing it. You know, and, you know, what do you think? Those fuel pellets, they do reprocess them, you know, and they do recycle them. And that is what it is, you know. It's all about nuclear fuel and nuclear bombs. And now with the whole North Korea thing going on and the whole Iran thing going on, they're gonna our energy department, with our new president, who we all love so much, they're going to ramp it up again. They're going to try to ramp it up. They're already trying to build new plants, you know, and that's basically what a metal oxide reactor is. It's a plutonium breeding machine, you know, and they can take those pellets and reprocess them later, you know, if that's what they want to do, and get the plutonium out of them, you know, and the other nuclides out of them. And, you know, there is one type of reactor, and I don't, given that it's still fissioning atoms, I don't agree with it, but they call it a molten salt reactor that it uses, actually they can use used spent fuel pellets to initialize the reaction. It's a thorium reaction, and I guess that as long as if it ever gets too hot, there's a salt plug in the bottom of the reactor, and that'll melt, and all of the contents of the reactor will pour down into a storage container, and as soon as it reaches a certain temperature lower, it immediately stops reacting. So there's no cool down process, there's no spent fuel pool, but then again, you end up with tons and tons and tons of highly radioactive salt, basically.
There's no reason to poison us. There is no, yeah. I cannot figure out a single reason to use anything that converts regular atoms into radioactive atoms. It's completely unnecessary, and unless they perfect the science of how to convert the waste immediately into something that is not 100%. I just read you what they talked to us about gamma rays. This is proven science. As long as it's outside your organs, it can irritate your skin and cause you skin cancer, but it can't damage. Now, this is the options we get. If we just, we'll just get skin cancer if we don't ingest it. But even, what is it, 1/10 millionth of a gram? I mean, a little tiny, tiny percentage of a gram of it, like a little whisper of it, is enough to infect your entire body, sit in your lungs for years. Honestly, yeah. It's
now,
not worth it.
Keep in mind that hot particles, these microscopic particles that are created, that are, you know, atom-sized particles. If they settle on your skin and you rub them in, I don't see why they couldn't work their way right into your bloodstream through your skin.
Yeah,
I
don't go along with this. Like, well, we need to accept that we have nuclear. No, we don't. We need to accept that we have a nuclear emergency. We have a chemical. We have an environmental collapse. We don't, I mean, I guess this is one of my new hot buttons about the environmental collapse, because I'm taking these political science classes. It's all about climate change, climate change, climate change. It's not climate change. It's environmental collapse, folks, and we need to get serious about it. The environment is collapsing. The climate is changing because the environment. And the reason this is, I don't know how you feel, but this is one of my pet peeves, and I guess why I'm going to school to maybe get some, I don't know, make them stop, legally stop. These are crimes. You cannot just set in plan an entire motion to destroy people's water supply, to destroy their food supply. That is really assault whether it's murder or not, yeah. It's still assault.
The nuclear industry is an anti-human industry. You know, they know it's poisonous and they know that it's going to get out, but they don't seem to give a damn because it's not affecting them. You know?
Well, it does affect them, but they're not allowed to talk about it. I mean, that's the sad part. We've seen that many, many times, you know, where someone who works in a nuclear power facility gets a really bad type of cancer or some type of a nervous system disorder within a year or two. They have to retire early, or they retire and then they get sick of cancer and die. And their families still deny that radioactivity had a hand in killing them. I mean, it's we have the capacity in our current world right now to live a good long life, a healthy, good long life, except for the fact that on top of that, we have an entire culture built on dependence. Of course, you're going to get sick. Of course, you need your flu shot. Of course, we need to have lots of energy. Of course, we have to have all these things. We don't have to have them. That's the reality. Humans have gotten along just fine without it for a long time.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, as long as we've been around, and that is one of the things about our species, is that in order for us to survive on this planet, we have to kind of destroy the environment to do it. We have to dig up the ground to build houses. We have to build power plants to create energy. I mean, imagine what would happen to our society tomorrow if all of a sudden there was just no more electricity. You know, our
that
whole
is coming. Puerto Rico is experiencing
society.
It right now. That's exactly where they're at. They're going to have it for 6 months. No electricity, no real infrastructure. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you want to tell me that they would
that.
Look how quickly Houston got back up on the grid. Hundreds of thousands of people drove there to do it. You know, I mean, honestly, they ought to be flying people in to help rebuild it immediately. I mean, yeah, you can't get there, but you can fly people there. And you're telling me that our government doesn't have the resources to get, you know, 100,000 people there to rebuild that grid and to make it work instead of making them live without electricity for 6 to 7 months, at least 6 months. You're telling me
that
they can't get that
tragic.
Island back up in 3 months, 2 months? It's ridiculous.
Get it going if they wanted to, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. We're watching colonialism, and it's the same idea, though, Jerome, about even us thinking we need to have electricity for all this long time. You know, like, there are ways for us to go about not being dependent on that. And I know many people here in the Northwest are living that lifestyle, have figured that out. You know?
Best they can, where the government will allow you. You know, I saw a couple of YouTube videos today wherein people build, this one guy built a wind turbine in his backyard, 30 feet tall, trying to get off the grid. And the city came down on him and was like, you can't build that. And he's like, yeah, I can and I will. It's my land. And he built it. And they put him in jail for 6 months for contempt of court for disobeying them. And furthermore, they tore down the turbine, and there's a foundation it's sitting on that is attached to the guy's house. And they're demanding he remove the foundation, even though it would damage the foundation at his home to do so.
What state is this in?
That, I believe, is in your home state of Oregon somewhere.
Yeah, Oregon. That's what I kind of had a feeling. I'd heard about that. There's also a guy here in Oregon who was capturing rainwater and got arrested. So Oregon is pretty tight on, you know, like wanting us. And the reason for that is because of the resources. They're really like, I mean, the Environmental Law Conference is here out of Eugene, Oregon, right? But the Northwest, yeah. But seriously, I don't know, understand that whole story, but it's beyond even that, because when the grid falls apart, people will come up with ideas. There are, I mean, seriously, do you know Shaziz.com? Do you go to Shaziz? Shaziz has been a guest on my show. This is why Larry Woods and Shaziz are these two science people I've met through UCY. And they have come up with these really great ideas for us to, like, get off the grid entirely. Like, it's super possible and not that expensive overall. But as Larry Woods and I talked about the last time, this is intentional. They are keeping us intentionally debilitated. I believe that this is part of the program, frankly, with the nuclear industry, the medical industry, every aspect of our life. It's like there's lots of cogs in the wheel. And if every cog, the culture and the people need to build a bridge between them and sustainable, and them being able to live that's not sustainable, people will grasp onto that extension and buy things and participate in things against their own interests, because every aspect, you can't do it 100%. It's the system has been designed so it's very difficult to get off 100%.
Yeah, and illegal at that. You know, they designed it so it's illegal to get off of this grid.
Yeah. Know? Well, the grid will get off of itself. The grid will get off of itself. So let's talk about your journey and the way that you're going to go down there. So you're going to start in Washington, and then in the spring, and then by the time, what, the end of summer, you'll be in San Diego?
I think so. You know, I'm thinking if I'm going, let's say, 20 miles a day or 25 miles a day, and the California coastline's what, like, 4,000 miles.
Yeah.
So that's every 4 days, 100 miles.
Yeah, but are you going to be staying 40, in some places to do days? Testing, though? That was my earlier question. Are you going to be staying in the same location to do testing for 2 and 3 days in a row, or are you just going to, like, go each location and go by once?
That's the thought initially. Before you just breached the subject, was
just gave you the different idea.
Test as I go along, but I think there may be some real merit in actually stopping for 3 or 4 days in certain places. Let's say,
let's say you find
something from a nuclear plant.
Yeah,
because I know there's several nuclear plants right on the ocean.
And you know, actually, you know what? That is a thought that you might want to think, is bring yourself a mask. Go buy one of those radiation, you know, like the gas mask that you can put on, and a kit just in case you come by a place that's really radioactive. You get that out of your backpack and throw that little that paper suit on, because it'll make a difference. Protect yourself.
That's a good idea. Yeah. You know, and also people don't realize that radioactive hydrogen or tritium cannot be sequestered or filtered. And so what they do is they vent it. You know, they vent megacuries of tritium into the atmosphere. Every single nuclear power plant does that. You know, and you know, of course, tritium is hydrogen. And so it combines with oxygen to make water. Plants absorb it. It makes the base of life radioactive, I guess you could say. You know, which is a bad thing. You know, any amount of radioactivity is not good, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was going through New Mexico recently. And right, let's say 100 miles south of Las Vegas, New Mexico, I was in the mountains up there, and we're rolling along, and I go by this semi, and the semi is loaded with these 4 foot by 4 foot by 4 foot containers with big yellow radioactive stickers on them. And I'm like, oh. So I whip out the Rad-X and I turn it on, and much to my surprise, it was 0.00. And then it went up to 0.1 and then back to 0.0. The whole time we're basically right behind this truck full of, I'm assuming it must have been medical waste. But I was stunned to find that there was really literally no background radiation there. You know, I think that when this is all over, I might move south of Las Vegas, New Mexico, just because it's, in my research so far, the cleanest place radionuclide-wise that I've seen yet, you know.
But, where is this? Where have you seen?
It's on Highway 40 is the road we were on, and we were about 100 miles south of Las Vegas, New Mexico, on Highway 40. Mm-hmm. And, I was just surprised as heck to find that there was almost, compared to Denver, with the 0.4, 0.5, 0.48, you know, all of a sudden I'm at 0.0 or 0.1, you know, that's amazing.
I think it's really amazing that we just sort of, that we have to even think about this. Like, I have been blown away in the last few weeks thinking about how much the events in Fukushima changed my life. Like, and all of our lives. I mean, the people listening to this show, I'm sure 10 years ago, most of them really were not even paying attention. I mean, there was a, you know, when Dr. Caldicott was in her heyday in the 70s and 80s, I remember seeing her on television, listening to her on the radio. I never in a million years dreamt that the radioactive contamination on planet Earth would be threatening life on our planet, and our government is continuing to ignore it. And not only that, lying to us.
Yeah.
And lying to us, on top of all of that, just lying to us, straight up lying to us.
And it's all about money, girl. That's what it's all about. Money and power.
Money and power. Well, there's a dynamics in that. And, you know, this is interesting how these social scientists and people in government and the academia handles this. And they look at people like, this is partly why the YouTube community is completely not respected by academics, because you say, oh, I watched a YouTube video. They're like, because you're not researched and you're not, you don't have like all the verification. You haven't done all that. And you can get all these scientific types on YouTube and you can get scientific research. But the issue is we're supposed to be unemotional about the radioactivity. It's really, it blows me away. They expect us to just look at it like it's an academic thing while our children are being killed. People in St. Louis, their children are getting sick. You know, people are not living good, healthy lives in St. Louis, where we know that we are ignoring a radioactive contaminated leak. And Roy Blunt, who is their senator, his son works for the company that owns the company that is burning radioactive fuel. I mean, it's so beyond comprehension that this is where we're at. And in our, this is why I'm really grateful that you're willing to like go out and do some testing and figure out a way to get it into academia, because academia is certainly being stopped at every chance they can.
Absolutely. And nuclear people that do nuclear research within academia, peer-reviewed, actual certified scientists, won't touch this stuff because it's the kiss of death. You know, as soon as you acknowledge that radiation is an issue and that we're destroying our ecosystem with it, as soon as you point that out, you lose your job because you know who's in charge, you know. And that's just the sad truth, is that the nuclear industry is in charge, and they're also in charge of the academia of it, and they can suppress that. You know, that's why the only place you're seeing that is from the public voice, from YouTube, for instance. You know, people on YouTube that are concerned, and rightly so, about the situation, and pointing it out so that other people can understand it. But as far as this academic community, you know, they're the ones that came up with the new numbers. Oh, yeah, it's we can quadruple the level of background radiation and be just fine, according to our research. And so then Obama comes out and says, yeah, we're going to increase safe levels because they're safe, because academia tells us they're safe. You know, but I don't know. I look around and like in the Denver area, super high incidences of lung cancer, pancreatic issues, huge amounts of mental illness issues, huge amounts of addiction issues. And I think the people don't understand that radiation, the Wigner effect of radiation literally affects the way that your neurons fire. And, you know, people who are exposed to high levels of radiation have a tendency to have more mental health issues than people who are not exposed to any radiation.
John Goffman, you know, said that in his book that schizophrenia is one of the first signs of exposure to schizophrenia and diabetes are the first two signs of radioactive contamination.
Yes, and I've been, I've had the, I guess I could call it an opportunity to watch some cable TV while I've been here in Arizona. And what strikes me is that every single commercial just about is for, you know, a diabetes drug or a diabetes pen or something to fight against diabetes. Like if there's an epidemic apparently of diabetes in our country. And I think the reason is because our pancreases are being poisoned and they are not able to function, you know, because I believe the pancreas is what produces insulin, right?
That's my understanding, but yeah, don't ask me. I'm not like the scientist type. This is why I can't really have Shaziz. I had Shaziz on and Larry Woods on both of you. I think I had Larry on twice, but I am not a scientist type, so I'm a very poor interviewer of scientists because I don't understand even their answers. I'll ask them a question, they explain things, and I feel kind of bad because I'm not inclined towards scientific answers. So, but they, you should check out Shaziz's website, shazziz.com. Super fascinating. And in fact, I think he's on your path eventually on your end. He's back east, so you could wind up and go that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I plan on meeting a few people as I go along, you know, and I would not be at all surprised if I end up with a bit of a following, you know, if there's two or three or four other people that are like, let us go along with you, you know.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
You know, yeah. Well, that's the kind of thing that will create a momentum of public opinion. I think that's what the bottom line is that you have to overwhelm the propaganda with truth and public opinion, you know, so that people start to understand there is no such thing as clean nuclear and there is no such thing as green energy. Energy costs, it costs. That's all there is to it, you know. And, you know, and once again, you know, I am a proponent of fossil fuels. I think we need to get the carbon back into the air. I think that we need to change the climate, that we are literally a frozen planet right now. What is it? 2/3 of our water is locked up in the ice cap.
Well, that is melting. It's all melting very quickly because the environment is collapsing. If you've seen the ice caps, just last week, another size of Antarctica broke off that was three times the size of Manhattan. So it's pretty serious. I mean, the oceans are going to rise because the ice caps are melting. You know, we may go through a small period of thing, but our planet is definitely getting warmer because the atmosphere is collapsing from all the chemicals and pollution in the air. Let's just be real. It is heating up our planet, our oceans. Look at the mass animal deaths. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're at the top of the food chain, but look what's happening at the bottom of the food chain.
Yeah, and that's what people don't pay attention to, is the bottom of the food chain. You know, the microbial life in the soil, for instance, which is what is the key to everything. You know, the little smallest critters are the things that create the energy that makes life possible, I guess. You know, and they die easy. They're easy to kill.
You know, well, we don't even see the little ones. We're on the mass animal death list, where you can go. There's actually something called endtimesprophecy.org, and she's keeping track of all these stories. September 26th, thousands of dead birds suddenly drop dead in Bali, Indonesia. Thousands. September 26th, hundreds of dead fish in Visu, Portugal. September 25th, tens of thousands of chickens dead in Puerto Rico from the Hurricane Maria. September 24th, 14 dolphins washed up in Marbella, Spain. Listen to this. This is sad. September 21st, 47 dolphins washed up this year along the Gulf Coast in America. 47. Thousands of dead fish in Florida in America on the 20th. Five dead dolphins washed up in the beach in Kinburn Spit, Ukraine. 30,000 fish die in Finisterre, France. And I mean, every time I go to this site, it's like you just list off scores and scores. 200 on September 25th, this is what they said they reported, September 15th, 201 whales and dolphins have washed up this year. Record-breaking number in Ireland. That's not the kind of news we want to see. We are in an urgent environmental collapse.
Yes, I agree. And it's going to kill off a lot of humans. That will happen.
You know, it is killing off lots of humans. It is killing off lots of humans.
All of our security, that's the only, in my opinion, that's the only thing that will stop the nuclear industry, is if enough random people die, as sad as that is, to wake other people up and go, hold it. You know, but of course they're suppressing it. They're like, well, like my mom, you know, died of pancreatitis, basically. And she lived in the Denver area most of her life.
So, wow. And that's not, it's like everybody that's dying in St. Louis. There's no connection to the radioactivity in St. Louis from the Manhattan Project. No connection whatsoever. And also, it's all across the country. I mean, there's major cities in every, and if it's not from nuclear, it's from chemical. It's still the same disregard. This is what I mean. Like, for me, Jerome, there's two things. One is the energy, we can learn to do things differently, use less energy, and use an energy source that is renewable and usable. And it's really important for us to actually decide that humans are going to find a solution. Like we're this idea that we're just going to lay down and go quietly while the military tells us how to live our lives is not going to function. It's not going to happen.
Sooner or later, people will start to wake up to it.
Well, I think that they are awake. I think they are awake. And I think this is why people like Donald Trump, because they felt like he was calling out the deep. I mean, I think they bought his lies, hook, line, and sinker. I think he is part of the deep state. But he was out there, you know, like, yeah, these people, they're lying to us. I mean, you know how he knows that the media is fake? Because they pushed him on us. They covered him 80 times more than Bernie, who had tens of thousands of people showing up. Instead of just 1,000.
Bernie is also part of the oligarchy. He was their front man to get Hillary Clinton elected.
I don't think so. I don't believe that at all. I think Bernie Sanders was a shock to the Democratic Party, and they had to, like, take drastic measures and act like Republicans and steal the primary. They scrubbed over 2 million voters in New York City. The Democrats.
They stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders.
I mean, you can go to gregpalast.com and look at the research that Greg Palast has done. But
there's another calls herself the sane progressive.
This on YouTube, the sane progressive.
Blog. Yeah, the sane progressive.
Okay.
Actually, I kind of stole my name from her because I
can't hear you.
Jerome. I said to myself, what can I? Hello.
Okay. There we go.
Good. Excuse me. But I decided to call myself the sane environmentalist because I don't want to be reactionary. You know, I want to be a scientist. You know, not just go out there like, you know, one thing about Kevin Blanch is that he just was very reactionary in his videos. You know, looking around, oh my God, look at this, used to be beautiful, now it's terrible, they're killing everything, it's all dead, and it's like...
But yeah, Kevin well, yeah, gets but a lot of people, he does shake a lot of people out of their boots. I mean, this is the thing about that type of activism. It has its place because it shakes people up. And people are, you know, he says things to people quite bluntly, how, you know, about what are you doing about it? He does challenge people like, what are you doing about it? And that's the reality. People need to like go, you know what? You're right. Like, we got to get at, I mean, for me, that's when my life changed, was when I heard Carl Grossman on the radio say to Helen Caldicott, he was in an interview right after Fukushima, Helen Caldicott had a radio show called If You Love This Planet. And she interviewed Carl Grossman and he said, look, this thing in Fukushima is so big, so grave, so urgent. And we have been trained to tell ourselves no. And we have been convinced that we can't make a difference and it's not up to us and we just don't matter. He said, you know what? Every voice matters. Whatever you think in your heart that you can do, go do it. Because we need all hands on deck. We need everybody. And that's when I went, you know what? I had been listening to Kevin say, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that's how, in fact, how I got engaged in this was I was looking on the internet and found Kevin because I couldn't find anything about nuclear on the internet. I found Miss Milky and then I found Kevin. But I didn't know about NIRS. I didn't know about all these environmental. There's hundreds of anti-nuclear groups across the country that are indeed working diligently. In fact, yesterday I was supposed to interview with Diane DiRigo, and she had to, they called a hearing on hearing 3053 for the Nuclear Waste Policy Amendment Act, and she wanted to do some work to get some questions into that panel. So there are people working this. There are people doing it. We don't hear about them, but there are people who are actively doing it.
Yes. Yeah, I'm one of them.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Like you. And the cool thing is, this is why I liked you on YouTube, is you were very frank. Like, look, I'm, you know, you're doing your own studies and you have kind of that scientific mind where you were able to. I have actually been looking at this for over like 5-6 years now. And my conception of it all is still quite rudimentary. But Jerome, we have like 45 seconds left. I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back in a couple weeks and tell us where you're at in the journey. And I don't know, we can talk about a little bit more about the philosophy of less is more.
Yes. And that was the fastest hour I've ever spent in my life, by the way.
It does go quickly. It does go quickly. But, you know, there's a lot to discuss. And hopefully our conversations encourage other people to get active, put your courage feet on, do what you can, take action. It really does matter. Whatever you think that you could be doing, please go do it because our environment is collapsing and it's up to us. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks, Jerome.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.